So,
what's the miss rate we're dealing with right now? So you normalize.
Yeah,
so.
That's the other thing.
Yeah.
I mean, 5% change in a miss rate, which is really tiny,
yeah,
is probably not going to matter much.
Okay.
So I think we need to go into that level of next level of detail.
Okay.
Because right now you're just looking at some plain averages blindly somewhat, right? So we need to be a little bit smarter about how we look at our data.
Okay.
So there could be two things, right? Just to speculate, right?
Mm.
So one is the miss rate very small. Making improvement there, the effect is actually quite minimalistic in that case.
But if the improvement is quite minimalistic, but we reduce event chance, so
right, yeah, so it's just a it's icing on the cake to some extent. It's a good scenario, you make a little bit better, and that's good,
right.
It's even better. But it's not as good as it's actually a typical case, and so I was saying that there are two extreme cases we have to watch for. One is those low miss rate. Right, so that's a good cache behavior. May not be that's the zone where LRC
where the cache would operate at all.
Right, yeah. So and then the other one is worst case extreme.
Mm.
Right, so cache is basically not effective.
Mm.
Right,
yeah.
And if you do anything better there, is probably also is well if you can actually significantly. Make a difference, improve the performance. So that would be something. But if you just have a slight improvement on the worst case, it's just because of the cache is not effective.
You know
well,
what I would do?
They're good in this case where you have high misses and you turn the filter on. That's the good thing of it, right? Like you're gonna avoid all this latency on the cache. You're gonna avoid using the SSD too much. You're gonna avoid. Even though if you know when to identify that you have a very low hit rate and then you're having, streaming, then you can potentially save all this cost of all these operations on the cache and then just simply stream it back, stream it to the application, and that's it.
Ricardo, here's one thing you need to do.
Okay.
You need to take each workload
and
plot the miss rate as you increase the cache size.
Okay,
that's a good point. Yes, yeah.
So once you have that plot, then you will know what is the range of cache sizes where your algorithm is sensitive. And then you can identify things like, okay, when is cache not effective? One way or the other, it's not effective to improve or reduce because either you contain the entire working set and you have a lot more space than that, or you have so little space that you cannot contain any part of the working set at all. Right? So you need to have those curves. So that then you can identify, here is the range of cache sizes where the cache actually becomes effective, or the cache becomes more interesting to look at. Because if you have really large cache, then it might not be correctly sized. And people may say you're spending way too much money to have your high-performance cache. You don't need that big a high-performance cache for this workload.
Right. I think that's a really good suggestion. That you need to really look at working set compared to cache size and see the, whether that's the operational zone that the cache is most important.
So the miss rate curves. Right? Like that's exactly the miss rate curves.
That's
a
miss rate curve.
Just run that. So maybe I can just colors a code. For
sure. Them. Yeah. I mean, if you can get it to work.
Yeah. Okay. I'll look into it. I mean,
this is a one-day trace, right?
One-day trace. I'll do it for the.
I'll do it for one. We can compare against this.
Okay.
You have all of this as one day, right? And now,
yes.
If you do MRCs for 1 week or 1 hour, then we can't use any of that to reason about this data.
Okay. I'll do it.
It doesn't have to be all the traces. I mean, just to cut down the time because at this point it's a finding, right? It's you don't want to.
Well, I got
to, and
if I run it on C and I run it on the cluster, I don't think I will have a problem. Like, I can just run one for each.
So you can get all the MRCs in one day, I guess.
Yes,
right.
I mean, once I have it, I have work in the code. Yes,
We should, if that's the case.
I mean, Steven says that he runs the entire race in hours, in just like 1 or 2 hours.
Did you see Steven today?
C++.
I haven't. No, I think he's busy.
No, he said he's coming in the morning. No, he didn't.
No.
I want to congratulate him.
Yeah, yeah. He didn't say anything.
Oh my goodness.
I was surprised.
Oh, by the way, I can't come to work. I said, yeah, of course. That's, you know, you can't find a better excuse.
I was super surprised.
Yeah,
I saw him a couple days ago. He should have told me.
And I was surprised that he's actually like, what, 7, 8, 9 years or something like that?
8 years for the girl.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
That man's quiet. Anyway, so I agree that's ought to be.
Because right now we have this. I mean, we have a whole bunch of workloads that all have no misses. I mean, they behave pretty much like Arc, and what that's telling me is that the cache replacement algorithm is immaterial at this cache.
Exactly.
And we are averaging across all of that. I don't think that's a good idea.
Right.
That's a very good point. Yeah, in that case, we can actually pick the typical, a few points, right? So you look at the cache miss curve and say, let's pick a region where the cache is...
For instance, pick a cache size where Arc is in the range of, say, 25% to 5% miss rate.
Yeah.
Okay.
So you're running Arc. Right? And you're plotting the miss rates.
Mm-hmm.
You're running Arc, by the way. Not LRU or anything.
Okay, Arc.
And you're plotting the miss rates. You already have all the plots. You already have all the data.
Yes.
You just need to plot them, basically.
Yes. Oh, yeah, that's true.
Oh, you have that?
Yeah, you have the data here. The miss rates are here.
No, that's only for that one cache size.
No, but he has for all the cache sizes.
Oh.
Okay, so I can do
that's makes sense.
Oh, that's even easier. Okay.
Yeah, that makes sense.
That won't take me an hour.
Because Cooler's MRC code is going to use LRU.
Oh, I see.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I can plot this using the data that I have.
And then you should pick cache sizes where Arc gives you, 25% to 5% in that range miss rate. Because only those miss rates are actually meaningful.
So I can make the experiments the next time with one cache size assigned and with one...
Correct.
Yeah, just pick one with whatever that you get. So, but I have a question there. Don't you still need to look at the extreme cases also? Just in case, because it could be the cache size is it's just not realistic to really get to... To 25% or 5%, whatever that you say. It's just because of the characteristic of the workload.
The other way that people usually do this is that they say that the cache contains a certain fraction of the working set. Because caches are sized based on a certain formula, which is, well, how much of the working set is contained in the cache? Sometimes it's all of it. All of the working set. But then what we also have is a very coarse-grained view of the working set.
Yeah.
A full day's worth of working set.
So
the real question is, what is the grain to think about as reasonable for holding in the cache?
Mm.
Right? You were going to say something.
No, I mean, yes, but let's keep in the subject and then
I'll
talk
about it.
Okay. Okay, so the other progress that I made is that yesterday, at 6-7 p.m. I found Dr. Geary, and he was like, "Yeah, I got time this evening, so let's talk right now." So I was like, "Okay." So we talked for an hour and a half about what I'd done and the progress I make and the problems that I have and the explanations and.
Mm-hmm.
So we started analyzing what I was doing and the problem that I had, for example, for identifying streaming behavior cheaply and things like that. So one thing that he mentioned that it was good, and I told him that Steven was working on that 12, is that a good way to identify streaming is identifying events in which you, for ARC, in which you evict from the D1 list and put on V1, and you evict from V1. So if you have that, if a high percentage of your accesses incur when your filter is turned off, incur in that action, in that event, then you'll probably have a streaming. So we were discussing about it, and he told me, well, there are different behaviors that you can analyze these events. So he has like a good grasp on things that he can say about the events of ARC, because he wrote analysis of ARC extensively. So probably it could be a good idea that Steven talks to him about it.
Okay,
gotcha. As well. And the other idea that I had is maybe when Sark is using ARC, I should check that event in particular, because it's not intrusive. I'm just checking a value,
yeah,
a percentage, right? A percentage of this many accesses, what's the percentages of accesses that incur in this event?
We just need ARC to report some additional events.
Exactly, some event. And then based on that, I can say,
we don't change its behavior.
We don't change its behavior. So we say, oh, they're streaming. We should filter everything. It's not even like we have Lark. We filter everything because we have streaming right now, right? And then when we decrease the hit rate more, even more than what it is right now, then we go back and turn the filter off.
By the way, the streaming ARC is very good at filtering out streaming access, right?
It will.
But you
were incurring evictions all the time.
That's the problem.
And that's the discussion that I was having with Giri. He was saying, like, oh, but ARC will know very well what to put in the T1 list and the T2 list, and it will keep whatever it needs in the cache. But I told him that. But you want to keep alive the cache. And if you incur in all these accesses, then you're writing on the SSD on every access. Because of the behavior, right? Like, you invalidate the page and then write on a new one.
Yeah, just give me one second.
And after that, I'm sorry for it. Doesn't matter.
Francisco was waiting for a signature on his PhD form.
I was checking your email about the
access. So you were able to create the table we spoke about?
Yes.
Yeah, in the document?
Yeah.
Good.
I'm giving you access.
Actually, that's a great table. I'm really curious about how...
But I don't know. I don't know if... I mean, I tried to...
I'm not saying that we have it yet, but I'm saying I'm looking forward to what will be the final outcome.
So I was trying to do it the way that we got it, but I don't know if it's... So since it's abstract, I don't see... Since we have, like, condition, action, consequence, and reaction.
Yeah,
I don't think like there should be a table for when the filter is turned on, because the reaction will be turning the filter off, right? Eventually.
Okay.
So the first condition is that your working set is on the cache and has a stable hit rate. So there it means that there is a set of pages stored in the cache that it's being maintained.
Of the working set? You mean subset here, or?
Well, the definition of JSON was like the working set is a set of pages that you reuse and that you should keep on the cache, right? So I was thinking of that definition.
I see.
I don't know if that's a good way for me to.
With that definition, I'm asking, is this word subset? Does this need to say subset of the working set?
Well, yes, it could be a subset of the working set, right? Because not necessarily you have everything.
Because the way the sentence reads, it means that the whole working set is in the cache.
Right.
Correct? Right. I'm not yes. misinterpreting this.
Yes, yes, yes.
That's
it could be it could be a subset, yes.
They just put it there. I think that's the subset. This means there's a set of pages stored in the cache that's being maintained at this period of X. There is a set of pages stored in the cache that's being maintained at this period of execution. I mean that this current phase.
Yes, but I didn't want to say phase
right.
because I want to be more
right.
broad. If I said, I mean, since it was an attract, I didn't want to use many concepts that I haven't defined theoretically.
So, turn the filter on. The filter is a way to control which pages would be inside cache and which pages would contribute to the cache.
So I'm not defining what the filter will do exactly, but I'm saying that the filter, how the filter should work. We need to.
This is not really true. We want to only insert pages that will contribute to the hit rate of the cache. Even when churning, you're inserting pages that will contribute to the hit rate of the cache. Hmm?
No, because when you're churning, it will not contribute.
That will harm the
hit rate of.
You're right.
Contribute to the hit rate. Contribute to the increasing or maintaining the hit rate, right?
Yeah.
Increasing
the hit rate.
Yes.
Maintaining is not enough.
Because maintaining means that it could be churning, right?
Mm.
Or that will increase the hit rate,
right?
Just to change that contribute to that. So that's the
that will increase, yeah, exactly.
There's a way of control which page will go inside. So we don't know what that filter is yet, right? So, but this is the wishful list.
This is a wishful list of properties that we want.
Right.
A cache replacement algorithm to have.
So this is a way to control which page to go inside. Hold on a sec. You turn the filter on.
Mm.
So that means when you say you control which page to go inside the cache, that means the pages that belong to the working set to go into the cache or
nothing goes in.
Well, no, it's not that nothing goes in, right? You have a criteria to select, right? Right now, it's like you access it twice. If it's in the ghost list, then you add it, right?
Right.
Let me
understand this a little bit more. You turn a filter on.
Yeah.
Okay. So obviously, this is not going to be a normal behavior like the traditional cache anymore.
Yeah.
So you have the filter on.
Mm-hmm.
And when the filter is on, you got to filter in something, right? You're going to filter in
out,
what?
Basically, filter out.
Or filter out something.
Yeah.
Right. Filter
some
out
items
what?
No longer get to go into the cache.
Pages that
like
are not in the ghost list. Pages that are not there.
Well, that means you are, yeah. Well, let's.
But
ghost list. But what do you mean by ghost list?
Pages that are not going to increase the cache hit rate. If there is a way to control
or filter out
pages
that not contributed
the
to
filter
the,
is a way to filter out pages
the hit rate right
filter out pages we only want to insert pages that will increase the hit rate of the cache.
So let's erase the filter out. The filter is a way to just put filter out pages to because the filter is a way to filter out pages.
So filter out pages.
Read very well. Filter
that,
out pages
that will not.
Correct.
Right.
Filter out pages that will not increase
the hit rate of the cache.
Perfect.
Filter out pages that will not increase. That will not increase.
And it's a way to prevent churning. So I'm assuming we will define churning.
This is, by the way, this is exercise in writing. How to write concisely without losing the message.
And that's the hardest thing.
But it comes with practice.
Yeah.
So you don't have to worry. Just
do
it enough number of times, it will happen.
Yeah. There are pages that will not increase. Let me see whether that's exactly what this is a little bit convoluted in the sense that you look at the result. Right? So the filter, so we're not defining what filter is.
No.
So as long as this page is not going to, well.
Because the thing is,
what do you mean increase? I still don't quite understand.
So the cache has still a certain hit rate.
Right, yeah.
And you have now the option of adding a page to the cache.
Well, you're comparing the case without the filter, right? So let me clarify that.
Mm-hmm.
So increase the hit rate of the of whatever the original, right?
Oh, the original cache.
Right, original cache.
Right.
And if this is going to contribute to the hit rate,
mm-hmm.
that means it's, in cache terms, it's a more important page
mm-hmm.
or something like that, right? So you can let it in.
Then everything else in the cache. Sorry, then something else in the cache. Then at least one item in the cache. So that item would be evicted and this item would be brought in.
We're brought in.
Mm-hmm.
So I still need some refinement, but that's fine. Yeah, I understand the meaning now. But
the consequence we are expecting would be that the hit rate increases.
So you keep the filter on. But in the case that we have a false positive,
mm.
the hit rate decreases, then you need to turn the filter back on.
Mm.
But
there are two possible consequences.
If you filter our pages, that will not increase the hit rate of the cache, or will not actually hit rate decreases,
mm.
will not decrease.
So here the action is with an intention, but that our guess may be wrong.
Exactly. I mean, it's not perfect.
Mm.
Possible consequence of the filter.
Mm-hmm.
So that means you don't have a perfect filter in
mm-hmm.
that case.
Exactly.
Right.
But it's a good algorithm because it's actually sensing that and reacting to it.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah, so this is not going to be in the final document.
No.
Just for our
This is paper one. This is paper two.
What?
Paper number one only talks about the first two columns.
And then we experiment with filters,
mm.
and the outcome of that filter,
mm.
whatever the technique that's being applied, still may not be the perfect one.
Right.
And that
right.
will be the possible outcome or consequence.
Yeah. Right. So now that's condition number one. Condition number two. So this is condition number one, which is that the subset of the working set. Oh, no, I don't want that.
It's okay. We understand what that is.
And then so condition number two is the working set in the cache is greatly improving the hit rate of the cache. What does that mean?
The cache is greatly improving.
What does that mean?
So you have a hit rate. A hit rate that has been increasing, but then at some point
increasing.
In time,
you mean increasing, not improving?
Yes.
Finish describing what you have.
Okay, so you have this is the case when you have a hit average of your entire phase, but then the working set that you have right now, when you sample what's happening, you discover that the hit rate is great, is much better than the hit rate of the entire phase. So the hit rate of the working set you're working with right now is improving the hit rate of the cache that the cache has in average.
So let me see whether I understand it. So you are inferring this is a phase transition
or
that happens.
I'm inferring that in at that moment in time, the cache eviction policy arc or whatever we have effectively cache the working set. So now the hit rate of the cache at that moment in time is much better than the hit rate of the previous.
And it's not improving? Has it saturated or?
No, I think it's just much better. I don't say
no, but
that
how do I know that in the next instant with arc it won't get even better?
I'm not checking that.
Let me.
It could get better.
Let me.
We talked about this yesterday. What time is it? 2:00. 2:30.
Is it 2:30?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So let me understand this. You're talking about The cache is warmed up, or something that actually sort of experiences transition period, and somehow the working set sort of sit more nicely into the cache.
The working set is contained in the cache, fully contained.
You can't fully contain. Not necessarily fully contained, right?
But it's
not necessarily fully contained. But it's there are some misses, but
so in time, this thing happens before that, right? So that's when the other one is
actually
stable.
But you may not even have two. Are we sure that two must precede one? Or can we skip two and go directly into one?
We don't know, right? Because what happens is that when there's an instability, the caching algorithm, what it does is that it gives a period of time for ARC to warm the cache up. So it gives us a certain number of requests before starting to check these conditions, right?
So what's the flip side? I mean, and now I'm actually a little bit, it's really confused, right? So one is you have stability there. That one is stability. So you have stability, and you say, well, that's the hit rate stabilizes, and that's during the period of time, so I turn it on because for all the reasons I would just talk about. Now, this is getting into stability or something like that. Because the transition is always the transition, right? It could be getting better.
Which of those is this number two now? Which of those that you listed up there?
This one.
Huh?
It's this one. The 20% or 1.2, the hit rate of the face is smaller than the hit rate of the sample, and the hit rate of the sample is above a certain value.
We could keep increasing, right? We talked about this yesterday.
Yes, it could keep increasing.
So how do you modify this?
But the thing is that yeah, but the thing that we talked about was that if the filter is on and you have pages that are still accessed frequently, they're going to still get cached when the filter is on, right? Because they're going to be inserted in the ghost list and then...
But you don't want them to be...
To delay that insertion?
No.
So maybe just wait for it to stabilize?
Right. I thought that's what we spoke about. So the hit rate of this current sample and the sample at T-1, how different was it? Whether it's approaching some stability or not.
Right.
So let's say that there is some stability. Let's say that it's more... what we are seeing is that the hit rate is going up, and then it's stabilizing at some point. What's the significance of that? So we enter a new phase, the hit rate improves because we get more and more items of the phase, and then we are reaching a stable point. What are the possibilities here? One is that the entire working set is in the cache. You can't get any more than 100% hit rate. Your hit rate is at the max, right? 100%. It's less likely for that to happen. Because then it means
but
that you spend too much
less
on your
than
cache.
One, anything less than one would be partial, right?
Anything less than one would mean that you still have some items that are not fitting in the cache are being accessed and they're contributing to churning. So
that's
isn't number two the same as number one?
Number one.
No, it's not the same.
No.
It's not the same because then you have a problem. You're letting things get worse. So what could happen? You can have the case where things you had a poor performance before. Now you have a very good performance and you're waiting for it to go down in order to make the change instead of waiting for the stabilities of the samples. So you want a stability of good behavior of the samples but not of the entire phase.
So to argue about that, I think if this is proving, you don't touch it because it is improving.
Okay,
right.
So
it's the way you go down. you're going to do something.
Or you can say, like, the working set in the cache is greatly improving, and add an extra condition, which is, like, it's greatly improving the hit rate on the cache, and it's stabilizing. Because you can...
So, if
you compare it to the previous
the
sample...
The consequences is this.
Shouldn't I just say working set in the cache is stable? Cache hit rate is stable. Can't I just say that? Cache. Because in the end, that's what you're waiting for.
But it's not going to be stable compared to the face. It's going to be stable compared to the previous sample.
Mm-hmm.
So, this is
stable.
This,
yeah, that's what
that's,
the hit rate stability means, right? That you're stable across samples. Isn't that what we are checking for in the end, whether it's increasing or decreasing?
Right.
Or what happens if it's decreasing and it's going all the way to zero? Oh, yeah, that's true. So the cache hit rate is high and stable. That's what we do. Is higher than some threshold, higher than some minimum threshold.
Well, that's the you overlap with the first condition.
that's what I'm wondering. I mean, are we overlapping with the first one?
This isn't my thinking. This is my thinking, seeing whether they're correct or not. You watch the triggering point, triggering events right now is a hit rate.
Yeah.
Right? The triggering event is you watch the hit rate.
Yeah.
When the hit rate goes up, so I guess you don't want to stop it. You just let it go.
Mm-hmm.
And at some point, probably it's going to stabilize.
Mm.
When you stabilize, your first condition comes true, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that means hit rate is actually stabilizes, and that's where it's come true. Filter is on.
Mm.
So the presumably this is going to be the rate that we're going to actually have increased the hit rate, but that's going to stable too,
right?
You wouldn't be the phase will be there, so it's going to be stable. Now, I think you have to have a triggering point where the filter needs to be turned off. That's when it starts to come down.
Mm.
And when it's coming down, that means, you know, there's various points. That's the working set shifts.
What is that up there? When the hit rate, the sample hit rate is 5 times worse than the face hit rate, which is a much larger...
Right. Time. Whatever the threshold you use, right? So
and then you turn off the filter.
You turn off.
Yes.
Turn off the filter.
So
that's why I think the consequence, the way you listed, is not very clear. I don't know what these consequences are. Are these consequences are immediate consequences or way later and serve as a trigger?
No, well, I mean, since there, if we're preventing churning, then it should increase.
I know, but you have a consequence there which says hit rate decrease.
Maybe we'll make... Right, so we're trying to detect the stability, but it's not perfect, right?
Let's say we are perfect. Where is the condition that will turn the filter off?
Yeah.
Oh, that there is a phase change.
The working set is...
Right,
is,
so what is that filter? I don't see it. Is it listed in the table? I guess not.
No, but if the hit rate decreases, there is a phase change. That's the way we're...
But you listed that as a consequence.
So this is also like a state machine. I think what you mean is a state machine, right?
Yeah.
So it's a looking at different triggering.
This is a much later event, and it's not a consequence of this. This could be a much later event.
Yes. It's
so
not immediate.
This consequence, the third thing, that's why I'm talking about this consequence when I first brought up. The consequence is, one of the consequences, the filter is not good.
Mm.
Right? That's not, you know,
that's
what
the way I read this table, actually, that
right.
The filter is not good.
Right.
It doesn't tell me anything about phase change.
Right.
I think you need a separate table for that.
Mm. And the other one is just a phase change.
Number two and number one, to me, they seem exactly the same, although you listed them as three separate ones. Remind me why they are three separate ones.
Because... well, basically, because in here we're talking about the sample being better than the face, and in here you're talking about the sample being similar to the face. And when you were trying to check this out, you the suggestion that you have to add here is to compare HS at time t with h s at t minus 1.
Won't that apply to number 2 as well? Won't the same number 3 apply to number 2? Would it work? Because there you're asking for a much more strict condition, which is that the sample hit rate should be very similar to the face hit rate. And the face hit rate includes activities from face, when the face changes, and that face hit rate could be much worse than the sample hit rate.
That's right? True. So instead of using this, I should change everything to HS. And then I wouldn't need this condition, I guess.
Yeah.
I just need one compared to the previous HS.
So do we have only two things? One is stable axes and the other is streaming axes. Do we have any third type?
I don't think so. I mean, this is what I come up with so far.
No.
Maybe
states,
there's something else.
States of the cache. That the cache is in a
right.
stable period.
Yeah.
And the cache is in a streaming period. What about caches in a unstable period?
Transition.
Don't you need that third one? That will basically turn on the filter if it was off. Oh, sorry.
Right.
Turn
that,
off.
Right. Well, we have that.
Yeah.
That's, so that's the separate table, right? That you just suggested.
I think we should have. We need to have maybe everything in the same table. So I want you to think about rethinking what the columns of the table are all about.
I think it's you know, it's probably we're getting there. Is actually think about this a state
like,
machine. Right?
I can add exactly, and
right.
I draw it. So I can add another column. Say this filter state. So you can say filter on.
Mm.
What's the consequence? The action, the reaction. So filter
but
off.
I would say just focus on the first two columns. Create a table that focus on the first two columns. If you want to add one column, don't make it consequence or reaction. Because I think the consequence and reaction part, I don't think belongs in this paper anyway.
Okay.
So we should, you know, I don't want you to be confused thinking about those additional columns.
Okay.
But if,
yeah.
but the state of the filter is something very relevant to this table.
Yes. So there are, I can see this. There are different kind of actions you're taking, not just the filter on and off, right? So this is a third action that you put there, filter everything. That means that you complete, so there are one more action that you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
I was just filtering on, but I think streaming should filter everything. It shouldn't
right.
be just the...
So that's fine. So I guess what needs to be here is when you actually think about, say, this one, right? So... the filter is off state, right? And you are actually starting to see if you are working on a finite, sort of the state machine, that's got to be, you know, what state you are right now,
mm-hmm.
and what event you encounter,
yeah.
and what's the new state you're going to be, and what actions actually you're going to...
Draw the state machine, I think that's probably better, because that will be more clear to you also, and then you can put it on a table if you want. So the other thing is here, why do you have to say filter everything? Why just not turn filter on? Because turning filter on will filter out streaming accesses, isn't it? Because there may be non-streaming accesses which you do not want to filter. I think it's safer to say filter on than to say filter everything. Because there may be like a low frequency non-streaming access going on that you don't that doesn't disturb this condition 3. You still encounter that condition, but it's just that most of the axes are streaming.
Right. Assuming that, well, yes.
I think this is very
good first cut.
Yeah.
I really
yeah.
like it, but I think now it's time for you
to refine
elevate it
yeah.
and take it to the next level and make it
yeah,
more robust.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
And so your the SARC algorithm uses all of these conditions, right?
Right.
Currently.
Yes.
But it doesn't do the stable detection the way we talk about it here.
No, because since we talk on Tuesday, I haven't made much progress on it. I was working on the IBM
mm-hmm.
part. But, yeah, I will work on that.
You'll say
no, that's fine. But I'm saying that the stability condition that we have here, which is that the current sample hit rate and the previous sample hit rate, and maybe in relation to a few sample hit rates, as opposed to comparing with the phase hit rate.
Yes, I haven't, but that's not yet.
But, well, are you convinced that that would be better than just comparing with the phase hit rate? You think it will, because there must be a reason for why you...
Change from that. Yeah, I actually changed from that to a phase.
Mm-hmm.
To a phase hit rate. There are two things that worry me when I implemented this. There is one thing, which is that the current sample hit rate, what it will do is that, for example, you have a list of three elements, right?
Mm.
And this is just the average hit rate of these are C-axes, each of three. Contain the hit rate of C-axes.
Yeah.
And I average this out.
Yeah.
And on each... So this, let's say T plus 1, T plus 2. And then I have a new one, which is T plus 3, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then I calculate the average of all these three,
yeah,
and I lift this out.
Yeah.
So this average,
mm-hmm,
the average of the whole thing will change slightly,
mm-hmm,
from one moment to the other. The other way I could do it is get three and then get three new ones, which is T plus 4,
yeah,
plus 5. So I need to decide that. That's the only thing that worries me. Because if I make this change like this, gradually like this, then I might make a decision too soon because they're going to look similar, right? Because it's the average between three of them and they share two elements, right?
Agreed.
And
yeah.
I send you the material on that weighted moving average, exponentially weighted moving average, remember?
Yes.
And that can be used here, particularly for this reason, which you give weights to the previous average and have the new value. And the dependent, you know, it's just a matter of changing the alpha, changing the weight.
Right.
And how do you actually treat the past?
And then I can have one phase hit rate and just this T plus
right.
3 or
yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah, so just put a value like, you know, 0.25 or something like that.
Okay.
Yeah, that you achieve the same thing and you don't need to... of course, the sensitivity depends upon the weight that you give. And more you give to the weight, to the past... that means it's smooth better.
Mm.
That means the less of threshold you have to use,
mm,
in that case. But that's just a threshold issue.
Mm-hmm.
I think what's important thing here is, you know, we don't know exactly what's the threshold.
If you're using that exponential moving average, you certainly don't want overlap between two samples.
Right. Just keep going.
Just make independent samples. Like the latter part, you say here.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
But I can do the weighted average. And also,
people do weighted average on the variance as well. In that slide I give you. That's also do that variance. The variance is very important. You're not just you're computing an average, moving average.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, you're computing how the new samples is actually deviate from the average. That's what you know, want to know. Because if it's a far, that means you have much variation in your samples. And that can be used for sort of determining your threshold value in that case. So you don't have to have a sort of, a constant threshold. You could have a threshold dependent upon the variation of your...
That makes sense.
It's just the difficult part on that is what threshold to use.
Right.
What weight to use. So it's just a transition of the problem into... But the computational wise is straightforward.
Yes.
But
no, well, I was... Yes, okay. So I got a... I did some statistic module that will let me. I mean, I'm already calculating variance,
right,
mean and all that, so I just would need to add the weight and
right,
and do that. And, but yes.
And that equation is right there on the two slides.
Right.
It's there. Yeah.
No, I'm doing that.
Right.
I'm doing some equation that doesn't let me, that won't cancel each other out as you add and things like that.
I think this would lead to something. This is really nice. This is a nice if you can identify the event, the triggering events, the states, and state transition reactions, and that's clear because you know it's sort of remove all the mechanical aspects and see what are eventually the intuition where
yeah,
it is.
Correct.
Right.
So
that was the whole point of this
yeah,
so that,
exercise.
So the ultimate algorithm will be. Not having any constants and doing machine learning. So if we have a graph set up for a state machine set up for this, and then
you can
reapply machine
yeah,
learning and run it through all the workloads, and we try with new workloads and see what's the behavior.
That actually might be an interesting. I mean, once we settle this down,
I mean, yes, I would think like it's
eventually that's a good thing. That's you add things that the community will like it because you train that what it is and makes that you know much perfect sense and actually achieve the optimal
right
to some extent.
So if we make this algorithm and then we polish it and that's fine and then, but then we can work on the machine learning. That does.
If that's
like,
your interest.
That will
yeah,
that learn everything.
Get me interested. In that. I like that.
So that's
so,
what I think is the.
So I guess I don't have more time. I need to go attend to other things. Are we setting up the time, like 1:30 on Friday for this, or should we? I think that
Friday 10 a.m. is fine.
10 a.m.
Whatever you guys decide, I'm fine.
10 a.m.
is fine. 10 a.m.
Okay. All right. That's set it for as a fixed time, so
yeah,
we can always. Yeah, it's Friday is much better than Tuesday.
Yeah.
I'm just crazy busy on Tuesday.
Okay. Sounds good. Sounds
yeah,
good.
Cool. All right.
Thank you.
And I just checked the SIG metrics.
Yeah.
Conference is like November, end of November or something like that.
Deadline.
Which
okay,
is good.
Doable.
Or maybe November. You can double check that. I saw it, but I forgot now.
Doable.
Yeah, it's doable. So
mm-hmm, okay. Sounds good. Okay, so I guess.